There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast on the left.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
Are we good to go?
No. Oh, good. Yeah.
Perfect. All right, everyone. Welcome to the show. That's Marcus Parks. I'm Ben Kissel.
My name's Ding Dong, goes to the Bing Bong, Henry Zebrowski. Having fun since 1947. Producing solid rock and roll comedy since 1947. Don't even look at me. I used to be somebody when you were a kid.
Yeah.
I used to be somebody. Don't look at your uncle that way. I used to be nine somebodies. You never were. You're just a boy. You never got a chance to be a professional.
Not yet. Well, you did get a chance to be a professional, and you blew it. You blew it. Your big shot.
I was too short to be in the war.
It's actually a good time to be short is in a war, bouncing around. The old cherub
man,
warrior.
Man, I gotta say, skip that flight in Malaysia, huh?
Don't do it. Don't bother with it.
Miss the flight. Go meet the girl, Stephanie. You told her you'd meet her at the bar, but said, oh, I gotta get on a flight to Malaysia this weekend. I got work to do. I say skip it and make it a sleepless in Seattle moment for yourself.
Yeah, that was not any real details in there about the Malaysian flight that went over, got shut down over the Ukraine. All right, everyone. Today we're going to talk about a subject that we've been wanting to talk about for a very long time, and finally the day is here. Waco, Texas, Mr. David Koresh and the Branch Davidians.
I got to say, normally, I like my Branch Davidian to be a medium rare, you know. I agree. It's a little upsetting.
It's a little bit insulting to the chef, though. You got to have the Branch Davidian raw, bloody, and raw.
Unfortunately, these Branch Davidians came out well done.
Yes, cool. I've been sitting on that joke for months.
Months, and man, was it worth it.
Well, one thing that I've been kind of surprised about, because you know, when I start researching something, it's the only thing that I can talk to people about for like a week.
Yeah.
Right.
So I've been kind of talking to people about the Branch Davidians, and it's funny, it's weird how many people don't know anything about this siege.
Well, it's because it was successfully, we were disinformed.
Yeah.
Successfully by our government.
We weren't disinformed, we were just not really informed because it's
disinformed.
I would call it a blooper. And the U.S. government, they don't really put it in the history books because it makes them look like murderers.
Yeah, it's a bit of a mix-em-up they did.
It's a mix-em-up.
It was a workaround.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
As you're fond of saying, a bit of a bugaboo here.
It was a bit of a bugaboo, and as we'll find out later, a lot of these senators, in particular one Mr. Chuck Schumer, tried to make a whole career out of this damn case.
The main problem with the Waco siege was because the ATF, they hate barns.
That was it. Yeah.
That's the big
specifically
problem.
Specifically compounds.
They
really hate compounds.
They just don't like anybody having a groovy time not on America's fucking dime.
Exactly. It was BATF, but BATF doesn't really work, so they just cut the barns out of the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms of their little acronym.
You should see them in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. They can't even get through the highway. They make it 3 miles down, and they're like, we got to arrest every silo in sight.
Oh, and they do it indeed.
Well, the Waco siege happened between February 28th and April 19th, 1993. It is one of the many incidents that we covered in the American Curse episode way long ago. It's also the same time period as the Boston bombings, the Boston Massacre, some of the biggest industrial bombings. It's also what inspired the biggest incidents of domestic terrorism in the United States, the Oklahoma City bombing.
Now, 1993 was also the same year as the first bombing in the World Trade Center, right?
Yes.
Heavy year.
Yeah.
Two Princes year. Was huge on the radio.
Whitney Houston's I Will Always Love You was number one on the charts.
Oh, and I don't think Kevin Costner gets enough respect and enough credit for that.
Yeah, because honestly, she was compact of frame, but she actually weighed 325 pounds. The simple act of him dragging her across that stage was a Herculean effort.
It was.
Go see Hercules. in theaters, sponsored by Henry Zebrowski.
And see The Bodyguard, of course. That's the reference where I Will Always Love You. That was the movie where that song became a big hit. And I'll tell you, Whitney ended her life. It went so smooth. She had a smooth ride.
I stayed in the Beverly Hilton this week, the floor below where Whitney Houston died. Huh. And they removed the numbers of all of the doors around that hotel room.
Oh, just to make it more creepy.
Yeah, so that you can't accidentally find it and go in there, because they had a lot of people going in there and stealing memorabilia. Which I can understand, because when Whitney Houston died, she shat gold out of her pussy.
That's why she weighed
it was
so much.
So big. It was crazy. Yeah,
that's, if Kevin Costner would have known before he signed up to be the bodyguard, her pussy was full of gold.
Everything was 10 times its worth after she died.
All right, let's get back on track. Yes.
This entire incident, it ended up with 76 men, women, and children dying in this compound outside of Waco, Texas, in a place they called Mount Carmel. These people were a part of a breakoff set called the Branch Davidians that were originally a part of the Seventh-day Adventists. And these people believed in the literal truth of the Bible.
And they were not a fun group, right? Like, these were guys, they couldn't have caffeine. They had really strict dietary concerns.
Sure.
And also they believe it's something about, like, the immortality of the soul, where it's like your soul actually remains in play. It's like a live ball in soccer. It remains in play until the end times come. Mm. So basically, when you die, we're basically all put into a waiting room waiting for Jesus to show up during the full end times that have been going on since 1844, as we all know.
Well, think about the magazine reading you can catch up on that you couldn't do while you were alive.
Oh, yeah,
you know, waiting in God's waiting room.
All but sorts of ghost dad scenarios.
Oh, and the humor that goes with it. But this is a very common theme that's expressed through most evangelicalism. And really, I disagree with you slightly, Mr. Zebrowski, because the seven seals, the apocalyptic religious types, they're the most fun to talk to. They are a good time. I mean, the end of days, I never wanted to come just so people can constantly be talking about it.
But they're like anything. They're fun on their turf. It's like a comedian. They're funny when you see them in they're comfortable.
Yeah.
But as soon as you get them in their house, you realize, man, this guy's gotta go.
Yeah. He's a hoarder. Why do you have all this trash around? Yeah, I don't have any money for garbage bags.
What the Branch Davidians believed in, they believed especially in the literal truth of Revelations, and they believed in the seven seals. But what they believed, it was not that the second coming of Jesus Christ was going to bring the seven seals about. It was instead the coming of what they called the final Messiah.
Cool.
And the final Messiah, the Lamb, as they called him.
He looked sort of like Sang-Soo for Mortal Kombat.
I've heard that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he would have a long mustache that hangs down. He could shapeshift into other Branch Davidians at will. Yeah,
like
he was pretty sweet. But the guy that they decided was the final Christ was a man born Vernon Wayne Howe, but eventually christened David Koresh.
Now, he had problems with dyslexia growing up, which I really enjoyed. Do you know what his childhood nickname was?
Mr. Retardo.
Mr. Retardo.
Mr. Retardo, that sounds like a superhero. It sounds like somebody that can never be put on fire. I'm Mr. Retardo.
Hey, Mr. Retardo, I'd love the act. Can we change the name?
Retardo?
Retardo, my last name's Retardo.
There had to be somebody last name Retardo at some point.
So he had a pretty rough upbringing. His mother was a 15-year-old high school dropout called Bonnie Sue Clark. He was born in Houston. Bonnie Sue Clark.
Bonnie Sue Clark.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He was allegedly gang raped by older boys when he was 8 years old.
It's hard to be young. This is what I say with kids these days, you know. Just leave a nasty message on the Facebook page, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is what they used to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, back in the 60s and 70s, there was no cyberbullying. There was only gang rape behind the convenience store.
Yeah. Ooh. Anal bullying.
Oh, yeah.
Not good.
So when Koresh was 22, he became a born-again Christian. He became a part of the Southern Baptist Church and then joined his mother's church, the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And then in 1982, he moved on out to Waco, Texas, join the Branch Davidians. But what you're asking, what else was David Koresh doing at that time? Was he just loving Jesus?
Well, now, was he David Koresh at this time?
He was not. He was still Vernon Wayne Howe.
Still Vernon Howell.
Still Vernon Howell.
So he was there a nobody.
He went there.
But they're burning.
Yeah.
Stinky Vernon. New Stinky Vernon's coming to the church.
Get out of here, Mr. Retardo. Yeah. Get out of here before I'm forced to rape you.
Are you burning for middle school? Didn't we call you Mr. Retardo?
Let me get your pants down. I just want to take a look at it.
I can't believe Mr. Retardo is here.
But he didn't just show up as Dirty Vernon. He showed up as Dirty Vernon, the rockin' dude who could play some sick licks.
This is the only reason you should ever go to college, so you can also live a different life that you had in high school.
That's the whole point. You can remake your whole lifestyle. Also, yeah, of course the Final Christ can shred on the electric guitar. If he didn't, I wouldn't believe it was him.
That's
him
right.
Coming down in a fucking Trans Am that's on fire all around the sides of it. He's riding a skateboard on top of the car, fucking just licking up, you know, like, going off the rails on a crazy trail.
Jesus used to be able to play a carved out squash. He could play a carved out squash like nobody's business.
Girl's
nobody knows
shirts
that.
Just blowing open and their nipples fully erect. Oh, yeah. Just looking at him.
David Koresh did play in a few bands in and around Waco, Texas. He tried to start his own record company, but because of lack of support and funds, it never got off the ground.
A connection to Manson.
Yep, definitely a connection to Manson. It said that his status as a rock singer was, quote, localized.
Localized.
No. I misspeak. Excuse me. Quote, very localized. Very
That sounds like something you say when you're a public, when you're in the public, when you're like a governor and you're like, don't worry, the swine flu's been localized. Very localized. Yeah. You're free to go to school now.
It's also a way to describe my dad's like comedy career. It's just my dad harassing the man at the butcher at the Publix. Like down
I do
the
comedy. I do comedy in my own living room and I do comedy at Mario's Butcher Shop.
Very That's localized.
It. Very localized.
So 1983, Vernon, let's just keep calling him Vernon until he switches his name over to Koresh. In 1983, Vernon starts claiming the gift of prophecy, and he shacks up with Lois Roden, who is the prophetess and leader of the sect. Only thing about that, Lois Roden, 77
years old. So this is a problem. I understand. Yeah, he's guitar playing dude. He could see in the future, kind of like Christopher Walken from Dead Zone. He meets a 77-year-old woman, and maybe she's got some swingers, but what she's also got a whole bunch of power behind her. So what you do, you got to step that dipstick down that oil well. Yeah, good work, Vernon.
It's an old car, but yeah, there's still oil in there, I'm sure. I'm sure you can get that dipstick nice and wet.
So Vernon's doing this entire thing to circumvent the man who claims to be the rightful heir to the Branch Davidians. That would be Lois's son, Jor.
Absolutely. In order for me to get my job on NBC's A to Z, I had to murder French Stewart.
I did not know that. Mm-hmm. Well, very good job. It's very underreported. So this is a little bit on the nose. I mean, people have to be warning this woman and be like, I don't think Vernon really likes you for your physical beauty. You're 77, your shade.
I know. I still got a clinching clam down there. You bring it on. You bring me a crooked little stinker and I can make it straight with my stinky, stinky hole there.
Might want to take over the church one day.
So Lois starts letting David or Vernon preach his own message to all of the Branch Davidians.
And he was just being like, you gotta love that gray bush. And she's like, God, preach out.
But this is a very smart way for him to do it because it's the one angle, the sexual angle, that her son, who is the next in line to lead the church, can't do.
He
can never bang his own mother to get the position.
So by 1987, the leadership is split, but with most people going over to Vernon's side. People don't like what George has to say.
What I also find, this is only like 3 degrees away from like an Owen Wilson movie. It's very close.
Right.
So Roden, he decides in a last-ditch effort to prove that Koresh or Vernon is not the Messiah, he makes a bit of a wager.
Oh.
And Roden
so
says...
So they like flipped coins and stuff like that,
no,
right? Like
no,
they,
no,
they
no.
bet on like a bunch of horses.
That's a good thing to wager on. Yeah.
No. They decided to wager on dead bodies.
Oh.
George Roden, he goes out to the local cemetery. He digs up the freshest body he can find, and he says, Vernon, if you are the Messiah, you are going to be able to raise this body.
And he's like, listen, buddy. Yes, I know. I took your job.
I've been fucking your mom.
Yeah.
But what I need you to do here, let's chill out with the wagers, huh?
He should have just had the old gal go in there, pretend to be a corpse, and then wake up. Everyone would have bought it.
Cover up like Vincent Price. Yeah. He slowly becomes this fucking, he's like playing the calliope.
Now rise, rise.
Rise, rise.
Well, speaking of, quick side note about the mother, George Roden claimed that Koresh had gotten his 77-year-old mother pregnant. And in a later interview, Koresh was quoted as saying, "If I took a 70-year-old woman and got her pregnant, you better watch out. I am God."
And that's what the quote that was then used by every single person in order to build the case against them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just, "I am God." And he was just being a smartass.
Yeah. Yeah. With his dick wet with some grandma oil.
I mean, people are very sensitive to these terms. David Koresh or Vernon at the time.
John Lennon got it. Exactly. People were really upset with him, and he was making some great tunes.
Exactly. I was just going to say, John Lennon was loved. He dropped words bigger than Jesus, and everybody turned on him, so you can imagine how people were upset with Mr. Koresh for even mentioning him and God in the same sentence.
And apparently, Jeff Foxworthy said, "Like,
might be a god if you could put a baby inside a 77-year-old woman's vagina."
But he's very successful.
Yeah, that's true.
So Vernon goes to the authorities to file charges against Roden, saying, "You know, okay, he is a grave digger. We must file charges."
He didn't even get to do the bet. He didn't even try to bring this poor person to life. Yeah. He just went, he's like, "I'm telling you, you've been digging up bodies," and he's like, "I'm still doing it." And he's just like trying to like move the dead body and like, "I'm alive."
Well, this was before Weekend at Bernie's came out, so he wasn't so creative. He didn't have the idea put into his brain by Hollywood yet.
You know, I'll say, as far as false messiahs go, and I've studied a lot of them, as far as false messiahs go, David Koresh is the most reasonable one out of them all.
Well, let's go back to this and really explain it, because this is a brilliant way of getting out of this challenge. He knows he can't raise this woman from the dead.
No, he knows.
He immediately just goes to the cops, makes himself look rational, and completely gets out of having to perform a miracle.
Well, he has several instances of looking very rational to the police. They but like, you know, when you have problems with the guns later on down the line, he did purchase those guns legally.
Yes.
Like, they were a fine community. I'm going to say this again. Any group of people that decide to go live in a bunker in the middle of the desert?
A compound, not a bunker.
I'm sorry. Because I know, Hitler is a bunker. Waco's a compound. We always have to remember that.
Yeah. Hitler is a bunker. Waco is a compound. Hitler is a bunker. Waco's a compound.
That
he didn't answer any questions on his SAT. Hitler's
a bunker. Waco is a compound for pages.
Yeah, now that's all we've been teaching him. So
we still gave him the 1300 because he spelled it all correctly. anybody who does this sort of scenario has got to be a little weird.
Yeah,
I don't think that this is that absurd.
It really isn't. Like, I think after checking out these people, like quite a bit, watching videos of them, you know, reading about a lot of testimonials, and a lot of the people in Waco, even the sheriff, the local sheriff, said these were very nice people. He said, you know, I really liked them a lot. A lot of the local people in Waco, they would go out to the compound and they, you know, all shoot guns together at the firing range. They were very well respected in the community.
Yeah, groovy. Everybody just had armpit hair.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems fine.
They remind me of Hare Krishnas. You know, they've done nothing wrong. I mean, I would love to see them in like a kick line. Like, just have to, like, everywhere they go, I kind of want somebody to kick them in their butt. But not that hard.
No,
kind of a comical kick.
Just be like, "You guys missed the GameCube." You do realize that, right? That the GameCube all came out and you all missed it. And they're like, "GameCube? All we have is stick and ball."
Just trying to grab them by their necks and be like, "It's 2014! 14!
So Roden never actually got charged with exhuming the corpse because the cops told him that they needed photographic evidence in order to convict the guy. So Koresh goes out, a gun battle starts, Roden gets shot in the arm, sheriff gets there, they get charged with attempted murder.
So
they eventually get off, though. However, what is the final nail in the coffin for Roden is that in 1989, at this point, all of the Koresh and his followers are all living in buses and tents in Palestine. Out in Palestine, Texas.
Thank God.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be a bit out of the way.
But yeah. It's a bit of a plane ride and a boat ride.
Oh, yeah. And so Roden, unfortunately, in 1989, he killed a guy with an axe axe to the skull for saying that this guy was the Messiah. Roden was convicted of murder, imprisoned in a mental hospital at Big Spring, Texas. Coincidentally, I know a lot of people who have done time at Big Spring.
I also find it very interesting. It's kind of like that scenario where they said they took all the people that said they were Napoleon and put them in one room in a French insane asylum. Mm. And they're all like, you know, like, I am Napoleon. It's like, no, it cannot be, for I am Napoleon. The other guy's like, I'm just short and I have an attitude problem.
Wow, I love that. I feel like they could just call it the conversation that never ends. Just a bunch of Napoleons in one room.
But you have so many people trying to reasonably argue that they are, in fact, the Messiah of this group.
But can we go... So we're in 89 now. Has Vernon become David yet?
He becomes David 1 year later, in 1990. He changes his name legally. He legally changes his name, and it says in the court documents, it says, quote, for publicity and business purposes, to David Koresh.
So it's interesting that he went through all of this, and this is the one thing with the ATF that we're going to talk about when it comes to the federal government branding them a cult and a terrorist group. He went through every legal step to get his name changed. He understood societal structure enough to go through the legal process of doing it.
His whole name was David Lollipop Knees Koresh. Yeah, and that was weird. That was a little weird.
I know. But what does David Koresh mean?
David Koresh, it is kind of a sideways reference to Cyrus the Great. And Cyrus the Great was a ruler back in the 500 BC, 600 BC, somewhere around there. And he was one of the guys that helped to lead the Jews out of persecution.
A very distant relative of Billy Ray Cyrus.
Oh, I've heard that.
Do you remember him?
So no more competition. I do remember him, of course.
Yeah, I remember it. And in fact, Billy Ray Cyrus will come up later.
What?
Yeah.
So Koresh no longer has any competition. His competition is in prison because he axed a dude in the face. So now it's sort of everyone's on board. The people even that were questioning Koresh were like, well, we're going with David now.
They've moved back into Mount Carmel. And in fact, Mount Carmel used to be a bunch of cottages. But all of the members, when they returned, they tore down all of the cottages and used the lumber from those to build a compound that we eventually came to know and love.
America hates this shit.
Right.
What we like is you take those cottages, you burn them down, you cook hot dogs with the fire that you burn those cottages down, and you build everything else out of aluminum siding.
Yeah, they did not have the typical American aluminum siding.
My other question too is Mount Carmel, now this isn't like a Willy Wonka.
It is not.
Type scenario.
It is a Bible reference.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And in fact, in the Bible, it describes a landscape much like that of Waco, Texas. Flat, dirty, and brown.
Made of candy.
And it's this was also in Palestine.
No.
This is Palestine. Oh, Mark.
No, this is back in Waco, Texas. This is back outside of Waco. Yeah, they've already left Palestine. In fact, in Texas, it's pronounced Palestine.
Well, of course, because Palestine is how they would say it in the Middle East. And we're different here in Texas.
Yeah, it's just like the town in Texas that spells Miami. They call it Miami. Yeah.
That is very interesting,
That's
though.
Just dumb. That's just dumb Texas mouth.
The environment looks like it's very Middle Eastern in Texas. It's
absolutely.
Dry and desert-like.
And I want to mention this fact that will become very important later. When they move back into Mount Carmel, the former tenants, the people that Roden was renting it out to, they had a meth lab in the compound.
So that was true. That was not a rumor.
There originally was a meth lab there, but as soon as Koresh found it, he called the cops and said, hey, there's a meth lab here. You need to come out and get rid of this. The cops came out. They got rid of it.
But this is my other question. Is there something that, because, you know, like, you know, Jim Jones, he was a maniac masquerading as a messiah.
Yeah.
David Koresh, the more I read about him and we research this, like, I really truly believe that he thought he was helping people from a genuine place.
Yes.
But does that not make him more dangerous a person?
This makes him, in my personal opinion, David Koresh was 20 years away from having a Brigham Young.
You think
so? Yeah, I mean, really. I mean, this is just a religious leader that brought his congregation together. They were getting educated. They were, I mean, you know, we'll go into some of the sexual exploits.
That's next.
It tends to be a man's downfall, and
but
it certainly
I hate to
was
say it also,
Mr. Koresh's as well.
But if you put 30 people under a tent,
there's gonna be fucking. You put well, like to be completely honest, you know, so it's like it's Brigham Young. You don't really don't think he wasn't finger popping everybody that was around him.
Of course,
you know that's one of the things that the Mormons and the Branch Davidians have in common is that a lot of these new religious sects, when they start getting big, that's when all the child sex abuse claims come.
Of course, because they're having sex with the children because those are the new women.
There's not a lot of people around. Yeah.
Well, that does also.
I'm not saying it's good.
Yeah.
I'm just saying they're fucking. They're obviously probably fucking a watermelon too. You know what I mean? Like they're carving holes out of sand. They're fucking the sand. It gets to a point where you're just like, I can fuck Julie.
It's a common theme amongst people in a commune. Yeah.
So they've got a compound, and David Koresh is in full on messiah mode. And this is when we start getting into the sex abuse
it's
allegations.
It's gotta be so hard to keep those robes clean.
Oh, we gotta ask
Lord Rael what he uses to keep his white so white.
Yeah, I think it's a. Public laundromat.
So first of all, when couples come into the Mount Carmel Center, the Mount Carmel compound, they take a vow of celibacy. The only person allowed to fuck is David Koresh. The reason why is in the scripture that they follow. And they follow all the scripture very, very literally, very tightly. It is said that in the end times, the Messiah will father 24 children. And those 24 children will be the elders that serve over the world that Jesus Christ rules over.
As if a bunch of horny priests back in the fucking like prehistory didn't think about that back in the day, just being like, whoever's leader, he's gonna be getting that tush.
Oh yeah, I mean it's what every government has ever done. It's what Congress constantly gives themselves a raise.
Yeah.
Well, they won't raise the minimum wage, you know, of course.
Hey guys. What if the leader is the only one who can fuck?
Am I the leader? Oh, I'm not? I don't like it. Well, I am the leader. I do like it. So we'll go with it.
Yeah. So he needs 24 different women to create 24 different children. So it seems like there weren't a whole lot of women of childbearing age or willing to go through with this. So he had.
There was no 77-year-olds there?
I mean, there were a lot of old people there. Yeah. Maybe, I think, too many because he had to start dipping into the youngers just a little bit. And let me say, before we go off on this, this is definitely. I will go ahead and say, remember, there is right, there is wrong, and there is the law.
Yes.
In Texas, at this time, it's not true anymore.
He loves to give this breakdown, by the way.
Yeah.
I just like making points.
You know, I just want to say this before Marcus says this. In Wisconsin, we were the last state to change the drinking age from 8. It was 18 for a long time to 21. So that's what we were all obsessed with, was drinking alcohol. But in Texas, they had a different age restriction.
Yes, we did. Up until a few years ago, the age of consent and the age of marriage, along with parental consent, was 14.
Ooh.
It's just a touch young. 14 years old.
14 years old.
How annoying it would be to have a 14-year-old boyfriend or girlfriend. That's got to just be, come on.
So theoretically, two 14-year-old kids could get parental permission to marry.
Absolutely.
They just have a house?
It's no different.
What does that look like?
It is no different than my two retarded cousins getting married, and they can't have a baby.
Yeah.
Right.
But, you know.
I mean, it's a fun house to be in, though, to be fair.
And there's also, there was one.
Spaghetti every night.
Yeah, but we don't eat spaghetti with forks, though, because I mashed the fork together and made it a knife.
So there was one allegation of a prepubescent girl saying that David Koresh molested her. She was a part of a, there were a couple of disgruntled members. There were a couple of people that got the fuck out of there.
Right.
And she testified that David Koresh had molested her at the age of 10. But her mother didn't believe her. Her grandmother didn't believe her. And the sheriff came in and investigated these claims. And he didn't find any evidence, nor did he find her credible. Her story kept changing, this and that. So there was no actual
evidence.
Which is
another, we cover all the time, which is not believing the victim.
Yeah.
It's constantly. But then it also, the allegations also came from people like Mark Bro.
No, we'll Mark talk about. Bro.
You know, Absolutely. Like Mark Bro is one of those
guys who showed up and tried to, like, take the seat from David Koresh, right. Mm-hmm. But he didn't have enough gumption to fight him, and then went to police saying, like, oh, he's fucking kids over there.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
So so just to clarify just a little bit, because this case is so insane. So we're in 1990 now.
Yeah.
The compound is in full swing.
Yeah.
This is pretty much the peak of his power.
I mean, we're getting more into 91, 92
91,
now. We're
92.
We're probably in about December 1992. We're only a few months away from the raid.
Have they built the compound already?
Absolutely.
So it's all compounded out. Everyone, and is it national news yet? Does everybody know about Koresh?
Nobody knows
does
about
law
Koresh.
Enforcement. Local
law enforcement has zero problems.
Because that's what they said. They said, like, they had several important mayors. There was, like, a judge that ended up being a Supreme Court judge. There was another, like,
there was a mayor that became the head of the FBI.
The FBI, and then a future governor of Texas.
And Richards was from Waco.
Was one of their neighbors. Yeah. And they all said the same thing. They're a peace-loving group that just they're weird and stinky, but they just kind of play tambourines and hang out in the compound.
So the people... tambourines.
No, they have
outside. Ann Richards sent in the National Guard. Oh, I wish she was still around. That immigration crisis wouldn't be happening if Miss Ann Richards was there. So all the local government and the people that are actually affected by this compound of religious fanatics don't have any problem with them whatsoever.
None whatsoever. It is not until Mark Bro. As Henry mentioned, Mark Bro gets kicked out because he's in a power struggle with Koresh. He gets kicked out. He vows revenge on them. So he starts calling up a bunch of different agencies saying they're stockpiling weapons. Mm-hmm. There's child abuse going on there.
So it's true, too, that in order for them to fund a lot of their day-to-day activities, mm-hmm. they bought guns and resold
completely
guns at
legal.
Gun shows.
At gun shows. All completely legal.
What I thought was so interesting, and it was such a good, just a total mental perspective shift. They were talking to one of the Branch Davidians, and they were, you know how we consider it like an arsenal of weapons, like a full-on artillery.
225 guns, it was said they had.
And he was saying it wasn't an arsenal, inventory.
Yeah, inventory.
It was just inventory. Like, we run a business. Yeah. Our business is selling guns at gun shows. It's just our inventory.
And there were 130 people living there.
And they were saying there was discrepancies over what they saw in there. That one thing where people were saying, like, FBI agents came and saw, ATF agents saw, like, the 50 caliber machine guns, and they're like, there's no such thing as a 50 caliber machine gun.
There's not. Do you know how fucking insane a 50 caliber machine gun would be?
I don't. Is that the one that that Superfly used?
Yeah, I think it was that. Yeah, I think
A 50 caliber machine gun will liquefy a person from, or just a 50 caliber gun. A 50 caliber sniper rifle will liquefy a head from 200 yards away.
I want to see it.
That's what David Koresh's elderly gal there.
Yeah.
That's what she got.
Yeah. And you're talking about her mouth to liquefy that head.
I'll liquefy your head.
Yeah. So this guy's, and he's also calling up the Cult Awareness Network. And the Cult Awareness Network are people that, you know, it was kind of created in the wake of Jonestown where they would go in, they would kidnap cult members.
They had very tenuous connections to the beginnings of Scientology as well.
Ooh.
Like the Cult Awareness Network is a very interesting group that could actually have its own episode of their connections, because then that's what they did, because the United States government used the Cult Awareness Network heavily to kind of frame the Waco scenario so that they can sell it to the people that were going and raiding them for good reason.
And again, not a difficult sell.
No.
The people turned on Lenin when he mentioned, Jesus. It's very easy to make Koresh seem like a monster.
Very easy. And so it's at this point that people start paying attention to the Branch Davidians.
So then we're in 92?
We're in 1992, late 93. Okay. Because it's in 1992, or earlier that year, because this whole thing happened, the Waco thing happened in early 1993. It's in 1992 that Ruby Ridge happens. And Ruby Ridge is a very infamous thing that a lot of militia members cite as the U.S. government. It's a big Second Amendment thing where this guy and his family had a bunch of guns. The ATF went in and ended up killing two people, wounding two people, like four ATF agents died. Huge PR disaster.
Yeah.
So at this point, the ATF is looking to polish up their image a little bit. And they're looking around for different places where they could do these really big, really public raids where they They can look like badasses. They can take a bunch of people down.
They wanted to have their Harlem Globetrotters going against the Washington Generals moment.
Easy
peasy. You know, they were just like, it's going to be a setup game. Everyone hates David Koresh. He thinks he's God. Let's take him down.
This is the police Oscars.
Right.
You know, like, we want to win Best Picture this year.
But they want to be Meryl Streep. And they're like, guaranteed a victory. Yeah. Very good.
This thing lasted 51 days. The ATF, while they were planning it, they were expecting it to last 20 minutes. Their plan was to go in, videotape this. It's going to last 20 minutes. We're going to have some great footage, and then we're going to get the fuck out of there.
No more U.S. military actions in any desert-related lands.
Yes.
We just don't do well unless there's grass and trees about.
So the search warrant comes up. The whole thing is behind...
Well, Nam wasn't so good, I guess. It's a flawed theory. But unless they're Germans, we don't do well against them.
Well, think about all the great food we got from Nam.
No, that's true.
You know, I love a pad Thai. That's Thailand. I love a general
banh mi.
Banh mi is great. Great sandwich.
So the whole thing is behind a search warrant. The ATF, they put out a search warrant for, they say, illegal guns. They say these people have modified AK-47s. They say that they have certain guns that they haven't paid the proper taxes on, like a $200 tax.
Which is really the thing here.
Yeah.
Is that, like, that's where it came from, like, because they didn't pay taxes on these guns.
Yeah.
Right.
And then it's like they incensed.
As we all know.
And a lot of this comes down from the Department of Treasury. Like, at the end end of the day, the Department of Treasury, that's the head of the body at this whole thing.
Yeah.
So, and it's trickling all down to the ATF and eventually the FBI.
Who can't trust the old IRS, you know? They're so good.
Great such people a trustworthy over there.
Oh, yeah.
But again, as we know, we've talked about it on all of the podcasts that we do, you're always breaking the law.
Yeah.
If the government wants to find you guilty, they can find you guilty of something, or at least enough reasonable doubt to go in there and mess with your life.
Absolutely. And this search warrant, included in the search warrant, not just all of the gun stuff, two-thirds of the search warrant, the vast majority of the search warrant, talked about the child abuse allegations.
Yes.
Even though the ATF has no jurisdiction whatsoever to investigate child abuse.
And that also pretty much came from the testimony of Mark Brough.
Yeah.
Like, he came out and he said that he was fucking children, which, I mean, technically he was, but legally, according to the lovely state of Texas, Marcus.
Right.
Yes, legally he was having sex with young kids.
Yes.
I mean, you know, it's Texas. I mean, what can you do? You can't...
And the allegations that the ATF put in their search warrant, there were things that were already taken care of. Like, first of all, a neighbor said that they heard machine gun fire on their property. A sheriff went out to investigate, and it was said that David Koresh owned something called a hellfire trigger.
What is a hellfire trigger?
It just makes... It kind of makes
it louder.
It makes it louder.
Why would you
makes
want it
fire
louder?
Just a little bit faster. Like, it's not... It makes it fire faster, but not illegal faster.
Ah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's still the same bullet. I mean,
you know, these Branch Davidians, they should have been lawyers.
Yeah.
The way
they
are successfully navigating all these laws, kids, awesome guns. Man. Yeah.
And not only that, but in the lead up to this, the ATF started going out to the gun store in Waco where a lot of their guns funneled through. And the owner of the place called up Koresh and said, hey, the ATF is here asking about you. And Koresh said, tell them to come on out.
Right.
Yeah, like,
he's like, we got nothing to hide. Just fucking come on out. Because they're starting to get nervous.
Right.
Because they're starting to hear shit.
The Branch Davidians are starting to get nervous.
Well, it's because now,
what's really weird about this whole process is that the ATF was doing, like basically talking to the newspapers about how, like, we're going to get these Branch Davidians, like, and, like, openly for them to read in the newspaper.
From what I recall, and like you were saying, again, this is where the ATF is going to save face.
Yeah.
You know, this is going to be their big victory lap, and everyone's going to love what they're doing.
They're calling the shot like Babe Ruth. And they're like, we're going to go and get those Branch Davidians.
Right.
They're like, we're just doing macrame.
And as the media covered Babe Ruth and left out the fact he was a raging alcoholic, racist, wife abuser, so did the media leave out the fact that ATF is completely overstepping the bounds of the federal government, should be controlled.
Well, what happened with that, with the newspapers, is that the ATF, they originally wanted the element of surprise. So the newspapers weren't supposed to release that.
Guys, we're going to dress up like 30 pizza delivery men.
Yeah.
Who's going to make the call? She's like, so how are these guys? Should we do like 15
15 vegetable pieces and a couple of meatloaves.
I think you're focusing too much on the pizza. There's going to be no actual pizza in the box.
We're going to need some of those, you know, those bags to keep the pizzas hot. We're going to need some Domino's.
Doesn't matter. No pizzas are actually in the box whatsoever.
You know
so.
What we're going to need is some Hyundai Sonatas.
That's
the perfect pizza delivery call.
Well, I got some fake zits I put on my face.
We can get the we can get the Hondas.
And it's not only this, but at the time, Waco, their district attorney, their prosecution of gun cases were at a record high, higher than most other districts in all of America.
I also imagine that the district attorney of Waco is like literally sitting on a chair made out of guns.
Right.
So guns. Guns are great. You can build a whole tent out of a gun.
Yeah. So on February 28th, 1993, over 100 ATF agents, along with three helicopters, show up at the compound. And the Branch Davidians, they definitely knew the raid was coming because since this was a PR move, the ATF, their publicity woman...
They sent, like, photographers and reporters.
Yeah, they called up the local news station and said, hey, we're going to be doing this raid, but they didn't tell them what time it was, so the reporters showed up 30 minutes before the fucking raid began.
And this is, you know...
Meanwhile, like, Mary Beth has been sewing new dresses for all of David Koresh's baby wives, and she's like, oh, the fashion show reporters are here. Right, and they're out there doing, like, long skirt fashion shows out in front of the compound.
Yeah. But this is where the theories and this is really where the media and the government do work together to create a single narrative.
It's pretty interesting.
At no point should the media be allowed to be tipped off by the government. They're like, oh, okay, yes, government. I mean, did you ever ask... Why are you guys going in there to David Koresh's place?
Like,
I don't think they cared.
To Alex Jones about it, but you see on TV and in the newspapers and on the internet what the government wants you to see.
Of course,
it
was just that woman, or a bit off topic, but when it comes to this subject, it's the woman who was reporting the war that's going on in Israel and Palestine right now. They're bombing Israel is just destroying Gaza. She was up there on a mountaintop watching with a bunch of Israelis. They were just laughing. I mean, it was like they were watching, I want to say...
Big Bang Theory.
Big Bang, because you know, in Israel, Big Bang Theory is a huge show. I was thinking maybe Perfect Strangers. I think that just got over there as well. And she tweeted out, you know, these people are acting like monsters watching all these folks get destroyed. Next day, fired.
Yeah.
Oh, immediately fired because she was, you know, pointing out...
There's a hardline thing. We are not getting very much information about what's going on.
You really have to watch them all.
Yeah, absolutely.
All the news channels and...
Yeah, and there's a lot of other... as far as Gaza goes, there's a lot of other...
It's a theater.
Anyways, so this reality show, before MTV's Real World, was the compound that David Koresh was
running. And I can give you a very good example of the media colluding with the government in this actual spot, in this actual Waco siege. There's a point during the siege in which the Branch Davidians rolled out this huge banner, and it said, God help us, we need the press. And then the next thing is a bunch of press people with their arms around each other, all smiling, and they all say in unison, God help us, we are the press.
Right, so the press was against him, which means they're going to lose. I mean, you look at the civil rights movement as well. The press was used for more of a beneficial, I mean, obviously civil rights was a good cause for the press.
Yeah.
But they were always out there, front line, because they knew if it's recorded, it's not going to be as brutal.
Not only that, the raid, the video of this raid was originally given to a local Waco television station, but the version that all of us see, if you watch the video of the raid, it is very badly
edited. It's kind of insanely cut together because it's jumps in time and just being like, you don't think I can't see that?
Yeah.
I see them shift positions. It's so weird.
Yeah, I mean, you're... making it look like how I watch a porno. You watch the first 44 seconds of the chick being like, I can't wait to have some big dong, and then you fast forward to the final 3 minutes. So let's go into this raid full on.
So these guys come
out. What's the date now?
This is February 28th, 1993.
February 28th, and this is the initial raid.
This is the initial raid. So about, just dozens of agents all pile out of these huge cattle cars, which have just, all they have, the only protection they have is just these tarps over these cattle cars. These guys fly out, and the ATF, by the way, is not very well trained with assault rifles and pistols.
It's really strange how few, for what they do.
If you
they're the Firearms Bureau.
If you watch the footage, they are handling their guns like idiots.
When you show the video of the dude climbing the ladder, he reaches, because basically they put ladders on top of the sides of the compound in order to climb up onto the roof. They show this video. This police officer's climbing ladder. He reaches for his gun, accidentally discharges in his holster and shoots himself in the leg. He falls off the fucking, like, it's a police academy movie.
Yeah, you do get the feeling it was like, all right, today's gun training. We're going to watch Die Hard. It's going to be great.
So they say that the Branch Davidians fired first. However, if you look at the front door of the compound, which is a metal door, the only holes that you see are bullets going in. And it said that what that first shot actually was one of the ATF agents accidentally fired off their gun, so all the rest of the ATF agents went apeshit and just started unloading into the house.
Yeah, just swiping the whole front of the house. It's kind of like the very popular theory of what actually happened to JFK, which I truly believe.
Yeah, right.
Me too. Which is a Secret Service officer. They have unsafetied M16 rifles underneath the seats of the security limos when they were driving behind JFK, where they really believe that it was a nervous new Secret Service member lifted up the AK, fell in the back of the seat, and accidentally discharged it and blew the back of JFK's head off.
Yeah.
Which is very interesting.
I believe that's what happened.
Again,
I mean, there's
also out of Police Academy 9.
Yeah, I don't think that's what happened, but we'll get it. We'll do that. We'll do a whole nother episode on that.
Yeah.
But yeah, was Bobcat Goldthwait in the ATF at the time? That's what I'm going to
know.
But
I will say the problem was that it turns out the guy who does all the sound effects, he's Lee Harvey Oswald in that movie.
Oh, the black fella.
He's quite good, but it was all just sounds and bloopers, and the girl with the big tits and Hightower was there.
Right,
great movie.
Yeah,
love it.
Absolutely great movie. So, the ATF maintains that they were a part of an ambush, but
By the way, how could they have been a part of an ambush? They were the ones attacking.
Being a victim of the ambush.
Victim of the ambush. No way.
But, someone made a very, very good point that if they wanted to ambush them, the ATF showed up in these big cattle trailers.
And again, press was there 30 minutes before.
Yeah, these huge cattle trailers.
They read about it in the newspaper. It was scheduled.
Yeah. With these huge tarps over them. If they really wanted to ambush them, they could have mowed them down in a matter of minutes. Before they even got, I'm talking D-Day style.
The Branch Davidians could have won the war.
Yeah, the Branch Davidians, they could have mowed these guys down.
David Koresh was really smart and knew, hey, they come and unload on a compound full of unarmed, like, women and children. They're going to get bad press out of this.
Yeah.
That's like their ultimate defense.
Yeah, and some of the guys in the Branch Davidian compound did return fire, but Koresh said that it was young guys. Just young guys that were scared shitless, and they just kind of unloaded.
And again, that is not illegal. You have a right to defend your property. Mm-hmm. If somebody comes up to your property, regardless if they're the sheriff or the ATF, I mean, you can't, if you're getting shot at, I mean.
Texas kind of has a stand your ground kind of law,
it's
right?
It's property law.
Yeah.
Yeah. So as soon as they start shooting, the Branch Davidians call 911, and I've heard the calls. These people are fucking terrified.
Of course they are. They're seeing helicopters come out of the sky. I have problems with just seeing helicopters just out in the sky alone by myself.
Mm-hmm. And these helicopters are strafing the top. There are ATF agents in the helicopters firing down. And there was one woman who was nursing her baby. She got shot through the hand. It went out her elbow.
Right.
And there was a guy that was one of the main guys, one of David Koresh's like right-hand men, who was killed when bullets from the helicopters came in through the walls while he was in his bedroom.
And this was when, I forget who it was, somebody ran in to see this man covered in water because they had destroyed the water supply, which was, of course, a military tactic. They took out their supplies for water. I mean, these aren't accidents, you know?
So this next part that I want to talk about.
As long as they don't mess with the saltines.
Leave my crackers alone.
There's something about cults. Love saltines.
What are you talking about?
I'm telling you. You got kids in a cult.
What is your
saltines
source for this?
But it was like the guys.
I used to work at a YMCA.
But the guys who all went to Heaven's Gate. Yeah. When they said like they would go to this one restaurant in Heaven's Gate and they'd all get the chicken pot pie.
Gotta get it.
Love the chicken pot pie. You know that these guys are eating a lot of casseroles, a lot of chicken pot pie.
And cult kids may have more saltines. And cult kids can't get enough of them.
Get out of here, kid.
Right.
So this next part comes from a documentary that was circulated around the United States by various right-wing militias called The Big Lie.
It's kind of entertaining, though.
It's a homemade video made by, I would guess, the 90s version of Orly Tates. Except a little bit more credible.
Mm-hmm.
So here's what she says about the initial raid. The most famous shot that we can see is these three agents, or these four agents, breaking in a window, tearing down a curtain, and then going inside. So what she says happens is that these three agents, they enter the window, and as soon as the three are inside, there's a cut, and a fourth agent that was on the roof, there's a cut where he's suddenly outside of the window, and he appears to grab a grenade off of his belt and throw a grenade into the window
right behind the agents.
And then he takes out his machine gun and fires twice into the window. And it's kind of, it's like, it's a little bit like you can't really explain it unless he was trying to kill his own people. The men who were killed, all three of them, allegedly, were members of Bill Clinton's Secret Service while Bill Clinton was on campaign. While Bill Clinton was president of the United States of America. What are you hiding, Clinton? What are you hiding?
I understand the tone of voice. You're saying there's a conspiracy.
I don't know what it would be.
I don't understand where the conspiracy is. Though
I don't either.
Well,
I haven't
good,
been
yeah.
able to figure it out yet.
Well, this was back in the day when he was doing like secret McDonald's runs before he was. Like,
I mean, he had a whole camera crew with him.
And yeah, you know, I don't know. It's kind of like this whole like Casey Kasem Israel Palestine conflict conspiracy theory that I'm working on right now. I haven't connected the dots yet, but I'm gonna, motherfucker.
Well, top 10 places Casey Kasem is right now, buried in a planter.
I like that one.
He's at the Ripley Believe It or Not Museum as the world's oldest skeleton. Yeah. Man, I don't know.
Well, this case is so so interesting on its own. We don't even need those wackadoo conspiracy theories. So did this documentary about what happened on the initial raid, because obviously then we have 51 days.
Yeah, 51 days.
Was this circulating during that time?
No.
Or did this come out completely post?
Late 93.
Okay.
This happened in February. So this, I think the video came out late 93, maybe early 94. But I believe it was the same year.
So on the 28th, all the ATF went in there. How long did that fight take?
2 hours.
2 hours, and then the ATF retreated.
Yeah, the ATF retreated because the ATF ran out of ammo.
Literally, and at this point, again, the Branch Davidians showing extreme
restraint.
Restraint, yeah. They could have mowed them all down again.
They could have killed every single one of them. But as soon as they started retreating, the Branch Davidians, any fire, which was very minimal, fire that they were putting out completely stopped.
And you do get the feeling at this point, 2 hours in, when the ATF ran out of bullets, they were really upset with the truck full of pizza. Yeah. You know, they were like, we should have
filled. We didn't even use the plant.
Throw the pepperoni at them.
I got an idea, guys. We still sell the pizza. Make the money back up for the raid. You know what I'm saying?
That's why you're on board.
So three additional people tried to return to the compound. They had gone to work that day. They tried getting back into the compound. One guy was shot as he tried to climb over the wall. He was shot 7 times, once through the eye, once through the heart, and 5 times in the back.
And then they just left him on that fence.
They left him on the fence for 5 days. Mm. Wild dogs were eating at his body. And then they finally got the body
this
with
is
the
an American citizen.
This is American
citizen.
This
is an American citizen killed by a government organization.
But isn't there a clause that the American government's not allowed to use their military on us?
And here is how they got around that. There is, it's called, I believe, prima facie, in which it is illegal for the United States government to use military force against its own citizens. However, the National Guard can be deployed if drugs are suspected.
Or if there's a McHale's Navy type hygiene scenario that needs to be done.
Yeah, Kelsey Grammer's involved. And if Kelsey Grammer's involved, drugs are definitely suspected.
And because of the previous meth lab that had been found in there, they used that as, I mean, it was
hearsay. So Koresh's goodwill, Koresh's going to the police, mm-hmm. and doing it all the proper way, getting this drug lab completely shut down, arresting the individuals that ran the damn thing, I believe,
yeah.
was the ultimate reason that they were able to just murder a bunch of citizens. Yeah. Yes.
That's why they were able to bring in the helicopters, all of the body armor, and eventually, which we'll get to later, the fucking tanks.
Right.
But in the interval between the initial raid and the second final raid, this is when there is a lot of negotiations going on this whole time, because 4 ATF agents were killed in this raid, 20 more were wounded, and right. since federal agents were killed in the raid, the FBI was brought in, and the FBI takes over from the ATF, and that's when the tanks come with them. Multiple, huge military tanks right. against 130 men, women, and children. Mostly right. a lot of elderly people, a lot of mothers, and a right. lot of children.
And going back to the, you know, what Israelis often say about the Palestinians and Hamas and things like that, they say that they use human shields and things, which yeah. may or may not be true with Hamas. But that was the one claim that the news media was making up as well when it came to Koresh and the Branch Davidians, that they were using kids and mm-hmm. women as, you know, in the front line so that, you know, no one would attack.
I just don't understand how the first raid just didn't work.
Because they ran out of ammo.
And I don't think they knew why they were there.
And they had no idea what they were doing. They spent 3 days training for this, but they were training with, like, Delta Team. But these guys didn't know how to raid a compound. These guys are used to raiding apartments. And if you see, they raided a house at Ruby Ridge. That fucked up, too. They couldn't handle one dude in a cabin. Yeah. How are they going to handle 130
people in a hidden compound with underground bunkers and mm-hmm. all this shit?
But, you know, yeah. you go back. I mean, this sort of stuff still happens today. Of course, we had Clive and Bundy. Mm-hmm. We talked about him a lot on Top Hat. And, of course, ATF came in there. And at this point, I feel like they're so much more gun-shy than they were. Hasn't really been a Koresh-like situation.
They cannot do it anymore. No. There's too much media attention.
Well, everyone's got GoPros on their heads.
The Branch Davidians would have a Twitter account. They would be live tweeting from the inside of that while the raid was happening.
And it's funny because mm-hmm. Clive Bundy did do that exact tactic of putting women and children up front.
Absolutely. But the Branch Davidians did not put women and yeah. children up front. In fact, the FBI requested that they send out a video, like, just let us know that the children are okay. We know there's a lot in there. Just let us know that mm-hmm. they're doing fine. So the Branch Davidians made this huge long video in which they
interviewed multiple videos. The FBI gave them the cameras.
Yeah, the FBI yeah. gave them the cameras. They gave
it's
them multiple
so interesting
videos.
Interesting how these negotiations mm-hmm. work.
Yeah,
how like they were actively talking the whole
yeah,
time.
The whole time,
and they were like, "We're here, man. We're here. You're yeah. keeping us inside here."
In fact, the FBI were the only people they could talk to because they shut off their electricity, water, and telephone lines. They could only talk to the FBI.
Right.
So they make this video, these multiple videos, talking to children. Talking to congregation members.
And Koresh had been shot during the original
yes,
raid.
He had been shot and he showed his bullet wound. He gives it to the FBI, but the FBI, after they get it, here's what the official report mm-hmm. said. That night, the Davidians sent out a videotape of the children in the compound. The negotiator's log shows that when the tape was reviewed, there was concern that if the tape were released to the media, Koresh would gain much sympathy.
Right. Of course, because they're all just sitting in there. Like, it's just them taking care of their kids, and they're not doing anything.
And the interesting thing about Koresh, he wasn't so... what's the large word to describe like a mastermind that's a
like
sociopath?
Like a megalomaniac.
That's yeah. right. I was trying to talk to my friend Dave about it. He's a megalomaniac. But he wasn't really like that. He was actually a relatively subdued personality.
He had the same problems of anybody who believes that they're the Messiah.
No, but he
which
didn't
is
believe,
you have,
he believed that he was an extension yeah. of Jesus, but he
still
did not claim to be. He always said that Jesus was better than him.
Yeah.
He and wasn't he like himself, David Icke in a pantsuit in an 89 interview in British TV on British TV claiming to be Jesus.
And in fact, he called himself, and this term was eventually turned around on him. He called himself the sinful Messiah.
I also have the, I should use that line if I'm ever like applying for a job again. It's a great right. interview tactic of yeah. just being like, hey, listen, I know Jesus is better than me. But at the same time, mm-hmm. let me fuck your wife.
This whole time, the FBI is doing their best to drive these people insane. They're using all of the siege tactics. They've got right. these bright stadium lights on them at all times. They're playing Nancy Sinatra's These Boots Are Made for Walking
great
over
song,
and yeah. over and over. Love that song. Oh, yeah. Love that whole album. It's great.
These days, you would have gotten a fucking...
Metallica.
Metallica or...
Taylor Swift.
Who's the other guy who sings the grenade for you? That guy. That the guy with the big hair. Who's, Bruce
Lenny Kravitz.
Bruce Madoff.
Daryl Woolery.
That's his name.
But the worst things they blasted at them They blasted the sound of rabbits being slaughtered. Hmm. Do you guys know what rabbits dying sounds like?
No, hey, but I bet you that you do.
Hey, guys, stop it. Come on now. Come on.
No, it's more like this.
You know what, though? It just makes me think of, like, stew.
Yeah. Everyone's walking around the compound just rock hard. They don't know why.
For hours on end. Let's hear it one more time.
Yeah.
I had this really delicious rabbit stew in New Orleans.
You're not supposed to think of food when you hear rabbits being massacred.
It's just delicious. It was so good.
So the FBI, in addition to blasting all of this bullshit at them all the time, they also take to mooning them.
Which is, you know, cops having fun. I told this story about my dad blasting polka music into the Bronx and stuff. Like, cops have a great sense of humor.
Yeah, well, except for when after the Branch Davidians buried one of their members out front, the FBI came out with one of their tanks and just rolled over the grave over and over and over again.
Some jokes are polarizing.
Yeah, I would argue they're not real funny unless you're on the side of the person making the joke.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They also ran over all their cars with the tanks. They ran over all the kids' go-karts.
I mean, honestly, in certain parts of Texas, the Branch Davidians would have thought that was hilarious.
I mean, kind of, yeah. I mean, like, oh, shit, you're fine.
Oh, there he goes. It was a monster truck.
Yeah. So the FBI says that, you know, Koresh lied to them 5 times about coming out. He said, I'm going to come out, and I'm not going to. There was only one time where he said, I want a message played to the world. After you play it, I'll come out. They played the message to the world. They sent it to all the media. And then he said, God says it's not the right time.
Yeah, but it was the message. It was him just playing Kokomo on the kazoo.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. Very talented. And what was that message?
The message was just, you know, I want to talk to people. I want to give my message. I want to tell them that we're not bad people.
Right.
You know, shit like that. But, you know, here's one thing that I believe really speaks towards him is that people were allowed to leave anytime they wanted to.
Right.
But as soon as they left, they were arrested. And 11 people went on trial for the deaths of those original 4 ATF agents.
Oh, because they got persecuted.
As soon as they got out.
But they were all acquitted, all 11.
All 11 were acquitted.
But that doesn't mean their lives weren't completely trashed with legal fees. And mm-hmm. like, your life is pretty much over. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know.
And then the threats start coming in. The Branch Davidians, they're talking on the phone to the FBI, and they start really getting into their heads like they could just set this place on fire.
Yeah.
And we'd all die. Like that's just. And so the guy, you know, the guy that they were talking to said, you know, we only have one fire extinguisher in here. And the FBI agent goes, somebody ought to buy some fire insurance.
Ooh.
Right. And at this time, again, so their narrative, you know, that they're sending to the media is getting completely twisted and turned, and really everyone just thinks, because, you know, I was 11, 12, 13 years old during
10.
This time.
Yeah.
Well, they never had a shot. I just
never
remember the
had
shot.
A shot.
I remember the picture of David Koresh with his hair all wild and crazy, and then a bunch of people all like huddled in a thing, and then the shot of Waco on fire, and all you think is like, oh, it's just a bunch of crazy people.
Yeah.
Right.
No, not at all. In fact, the people inside, they wanted a press member to be a go-between them and the FBI, because the FBI kept constantly lying to them about stuff. I've heard the transcript. I've heard the audio recordings.
Right.
They're just constantly catching them in lies. But finally.
And these were some smart people, even though
a couple of them were Harvard grads.
Right.
Like, they weren't idiots.
Well, they had no choice but to lie, though. Yeah. They had no choice.
Yeah. I mean, they were trying to. I mean, they kept saying they were trying to get him out of there. But one day, they finally hit a breakthrough. David Koresh said, "All right, God has spoken to me. He has said, write things down. Start writing. You need to start writing about the 7 seals." And he told the FBI, he said, "I have deciphered the first seal. The interpretation that I had earlier, the prophecies of dying, are not going to be fulfilled. I just need to write these 7 seals, and once they're all deciphered, then we will come
out."
And
it was just like one of his hot pockets got burnt.
Right,
like
right.
In the oven, and he's just like, this is the sign.
Yeah.
He's like, I just think of the oven, I think that the dial on the oven's broken. He's like, no, it's Jesus Christ!
Right.
Look at it.
No, look at it. It looks kind of, it looks like Jesus is foot. Just get away from me.
And the and the negotiators that were talking to him, the people that are working on the psychological profiles, the people working on the psychological profile said, do not engage these people. Do not be aggressive with them. Just let it run its course. Negotiators said, this is a huge breakthrough. We're on our way. But unfortunately, Attorney General Janet Reno didn't feel like waiting around.
No.
Well, you know, I mean, usually attorney generals don't have such big balls. You know?
I miss her.
Oh, she was huge.
I miss the good old-fashioned ugly person in office. You don't get a lot of them anymore.
Not anymore.
Well, Will Ferrell did a great impression of Janet Reno. Play my song.
Janet Reno's probably dance party?
Yeah, probably my boots were made for walking, as a matter of fact. That was probably her song. But, I mean, this was definitely an attempt by Koresh to just buy time.
Yes.
I mean, some people say it was an attempt to buy time, but, you know, I believe the negotiators when they say it was not an attempt to buy time. This was the breakthrough that they were looking for to say, like, all right, they will come out. Eventually.
No, it's like convincing, you know, like Johnny Depp to like finally come out of his trailer by saying, yes, we'll call you Don Quixote for the day. You know what I mean? Like, right. That's what they're like, yes, of course. Yes, yes, let him just finish this journal.
But public opinion at that time, this thing had been going on for 51 days. The vast public opinion was go in, get him.
Right.
Like, you got to go in. Like, people like,
oh, this is money.
I mean, we make fun of, you know, Keeping Up with the Kardashians and all these ridiculous reality shows. But at least it's not the O.J. Simpson trial and Waco anymore.
Yeah. Well,
like, that's what Waco... I mean, really,
that's
these
the
are
90s was. People were, like, all nostalgic for the 90s. The 90s were fucking horrible.
Real reality TV.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
World Trade Center, Waco, now, Oklahoma City.
We don't get the news anymore.
Right.
Now we just don't get the news.
Well, we didn't get the news back then, though, either. Yeah. We just got the show.
And so it's on April 18th that Janet Reno says, tomorrow, 6 a.m., you get the tanks... And you fucking go in and get them.
And give me the pizzas.
So at
you know, David's actually getting really good at making pizzas. He's like, I think I got a future on this. I think once we're done with this raid.
So at 6 a.m., April 19th, 1983, the tanks come in and they start spraying what is called CS gas.
Now, this
into
is
the compound.
To like, this is what they said, gently convince the women and children to leave the compound. And,
so the CS gas. The CS gas that they used, by the way, this is the same type of gas that they expose soldiers to at boot camp for a few minutes at a time. And everyone's seen the videos of the soldiers. They're crying.
Right, right.
They're, you know, snot's coming out everywhere.
Yeah, and they're choking. It's
terrible. They're choking. It's they're exposed to it for a few minutes.
It's like being in Ben's bedroom.
Yeah. I gotta get a screen for my window. Thank you. I can't. There are bugs. A lot of bugs out there. So
the Branch Davidians, they were exposed to 10 times the amount over a period of 6 hours, and not
10 times the amount that would be a trainee in the military.
Exactly, experience. 10 times the amount. And the CS gas that they used, they actually used a powder, and what they mixed the powder with was methylamine chloride, also known as paint thinner.
Christ.
And in enclosed spaces, it can cause unconsciousness and death, but most importantly, it can be ignited with a single spark into a huge fucking fireball.
So after Koresh worked so hard to get crystal meth out, they brought paint thinner right back in.
You know? They brought methylamine in.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, that was it.
So at 9 a.m., a few hours after the raid begins, and the tanks are just fucking destroying this compound.
It's easy. It was made by leftover cabin wood.
Right, right.
And they're saying that they just need to poke a couple of holes in here and there to get the tanks through.
You
so
watch
they can
a tank just rip through the wall and pull out the whole thing. It's crazy.
Totally obscene.
Yeah, and it's at 9 a.m. The raid's been going on for
a few
hours.
It was like a Battle Robots show.
BattleBots.
Yeah.
They did look like Battle Robots. Yeah.
All those people died, though, so.
But it was, it was a 70.
A couple of careers
people.
Got killed with BattleBots. A couple of comedians' careers were killed.
So the raid's going on for 3 hours, and it's not even really going all that well, but Janet Reno decides, you know what, I need to head to Baltimore. I got a speech. So she turns the entire control over to...
And it was all about tucking dick.
Yeah. This is how you do it, ladies. I mean, guys.
So she leaves, and the whole thing is left over to the head of the FBI and some people from the Clinton administration. We have no clue what went on in that situation room. There's no record of it, so we have no idea. But
I'll burn them down. Burn them down. if you're a president, burn them down is a fun thing to say.
You just
burn
scream it out and be like, make the fire. Someone changed the words in the record to make it sound cooler.
Yeah.
So at 11.
You would do that. See, how would you do it, Marcus?
How would I do what?
You got to be told to burn it down. Uh-huh. If you're a president, I would be more of a guy next to a fire. Maybe I'm sipping on a key. Burn it down. But you're like, let's burn this motherfucker down.
Yeah, we better go get them coals in there.
I hope they brought hot dogs. And it's like, thank you, President Robin Williams.
I just look him straight in the eye and go, hellfire.
There we go.
Different worlds.
Yeah. So at 11:24 a.m., the gunfire begins. Mm. Not from the Branch Davidians, but from the FBI. They start shooting into all of the holes that they've made from the tanks. And we know this not because we have any actual, like, on-the-ground footage of it. They did all this behind the compound where there was no actual news media. We know this because there was a plane overhead using something called FLIR, which is essentially aerial thermal imaging. Mm-hmm. So they're able to look down and they're able to see every time a gunshot goes off. And they're seeing all around the back. They're seeing from two different tanks, mm-hmm. agents on these tanks just firing into this fucking house.
It most looks like a great in. Movie.
It had to have been. And the FBI still maintains that they never fired a single shot during the entire siege. The thermal imaging also shows people entering and exiting the armed vehicles, but it also shows people being run over by the armed by these tanks. And in fact, there's a picture. There's one point where one of the tanks, the tread, the tread completely breaks. Right. So they have to go out and tow it out. And first of all, they're saying that these people are being fired on, like the FBI is being fired on. But they just have some dudes amble up to the tank and hook it on and then pull it out. But you look underneath the tire tread, and what do you see? But a piece of red cloth. Later, after the whole place burns down, they find a heavily mutilated body with an arm being ripped off. And what is that guy wearing? A red jacket.
Yeah.
Right.
It's very interesting when you watch the video of the raid. The attitude is so casual.
Yeah.
Like, people are just walking in and out of there. It's kind of crazy. It feels like you're watching, like, CCTV footage of, like, a street. It makes no sense. Yeah, there's no urgency. At
all. Right, so the women and children, they all retreat to a concrete bunker in the kitchen. So the FBI, they have on-the-ground thermal imaging going on at this point, so they know where everybody is.
And they're watching them go underground, and then basically that tank comes and parks itself right above the entrance of the bunker.
Yeah, it parks right above the entrance of the bunker, so people cannot get out. And it also goes in and it goes into the compound and it shoots tear gas in there, the CS gas in there, right where all of the women and children are. And the FBI maintains, like they said, like, you know what? No, you know, these people have gas masks. It's not going to hurt the baby. Babies don't have gas masks.
Right.
There's not baby-sized gas masks.
Babies are immune to gas, I should know. Yeah. You can fart on a baby all day.
Oh, have you been farting on a lot of babies, or were you a farted on baby?
I was a farted upon baby. Uh-huh. And look at me.
Strong.
I mean, I got all nine fingers.
So they've been firing into this compound for 30 minutes now. It is now about noon.
Right.
The dust from the CS gas covers everything. Mm. They've been running into the compound over and over again. They've got these people at the Branch Davidians have kerosene cans all around that they've been using to light their lamps because they haven't had electricity for 50 days. So this whole place, the vapor is coming up. All of the CS gas is everywhere. There are holes in the compound which are creating these wind tunnels. There's 25 mile an hour winds. These wind tunnels, if there's a fire without this accelerant, it is going to take this fucking place down. But it is soaked in kerosene and methylamine. So it's at this point that they decide to put one more little raid of gas into the compound. But another smartass decides that he's going to fire some tear gas canisters in as well. Unfortunately, they're pyrotechnic tear gas canisters.
So they burst and it sets the fire of the whole fucking compound.
So they burst and a spark hits that gas and it sends a fireball shooting from one end of the compound to another. which ignites another fireball, which sends another one fucking going.
Meanwhile, the tanks are just ripping through the compound walls, just like tearing it down. Down the, all the debris is falling on top of the bunker entrance.
Yeah, and in fact,
they're already making it a Dutch oven, and not a fun one you do with your girlfriend or your boyfriend. Fart into it.
But, the person doesn't like that.
No, so they were
kind of making it a Dutch oven.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the British Davidians didn't like it, but they were laughing. The people, the FBI couldn't get enough of the joke.
The FBI was loving it. And there were all these people trapped in this bunker, and the coroner report said that the vast majority of children that were found in the bunker died from blunt force trauma to the head, which was concrete coming down and raining down on top of them from the tanks ahead. But the vast, a lot of
people...
And again,
the only thing these people were guilty of was being slightly different Christians.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was
At the same time, you know, I don't enjoy any type of Christian. I don't enjoy them. Of course, you know, they're hard to understand. But when it...
My parents go to an evangelical Christian Haitian church.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that pastor at the pulpit that gets federal funding or federal tax exemption, rather, says just as crazy things as David Koresh said to these people.
In fact, I would argue that David Koresh, he was not a hateful man in the least bit. His teachings...
I mean, he was an eagle.
They weren't hateful at all. I would consider evangelical Christians to be worse and more harmful than the Branch Davidians.
Our government also hates the idea that anybody chooses to live outside of the government.
Yeah.
Like, if you can go and live on a compound in your own independent lifestyle, they don't want to see that at all.
No.
Because it just shows how hard we are to control. They like to keep the main line of just being like, you need to respect us, you need to stay an active member of our society.
But they were active members of the society. Yeah. Again, David Koresh, he could have just called himself David Koresh.
Yeah, he did it legally.
I mean, he did everything legally. Yeah.
These guys followed the book of
legal
the law.
Guns. I mean,
and
they were on
and
the
David
books.
Koresh constantly talked about he constantly said like, hey, I'm an American first.
Yeah,
this he's like I love being an American. I think this is a great country,
right?
But the people that run it are now killing me.
Yes.
And the FBI, this whole time, this place is on fire. And I'm sure people out there, you may not even know what it was, but everyone's seen a picture of the compound on fire.
Yes.
Horrifying. And you would think that they would want people in there to try to get this under control, but the FBI actively kept fire trucks away from the compound because, as they said, they were afraid that firefighters were going to be shot.
And
though the Branch Davidians had not fired a single shot that entire fucking day.
Also, the party line was that they had set the fire.
Yeah.
The party line is that the Branch Davidians set the fire, and they did it as a big suicide mission. And it's just like, no.
Was Heaven's Gate before or after?
It was 3 or 4 years after.
So, but Jonestown, of course, was before. So the notion of cult suicide, mass suicide, was a narrative that the American public would be easily, it's easily digestible.
Yeah, I mean, Jonestown already happened, so I mean, if you got 900, what are 70?
Right.
You know, like, they're like, oh, well, that's nowhere near as bad.
Right.
But, you know, they kept they kept all the fire trucks away, and in that bunker where the women and children were, they see a bottleneck where they can escape. They see a hole in the wall where they can escape. Unfortunately, there are a couple of FBI agents with machine guns there. And this is backed up by thermal imaging. Fucking Chuck Schumer, he maintained that all these people, 27 people, by the way, died from self-inflicted gunshot wounds.
Self-inflicted
gunshot wounds. But you can see from the thermal imaging, two people facing this crowd, unloading into them. Just rapid fucking fire.
Because now it comes down to, you can't have any witnesses.
Yeah, it's like of course.
It's like the Expendables, you know?
Yeah. But you know what? I love Chuck Schumer when he comes under New York One. What a charmer.
Oh, he's such a nice liberal Democrat.
He cares for
everybody.
Yeah. And Chuck Schumer. He's always doing the Easter egg hunts.
Chuck Schumer's a total schmuck. He should be Schmuck Schumer.
Schmuck Schumer. That's what Jamie's name.
Tweet at him, Schmuck Schumer. And then say hashtag last podcast
remember
on the left.
Remember Waco,
Remember Waco, Schmuck Schumer. No, it is pathetic.
Yeah.
And a lot of senators and a lot of congressmen tried to make this a career move for them. Yeah.
But there were a lot of senators and congressmen who were actually trying to find the truth on this. This was back before Congress was 100% shitty.
Well, I mean, you know, there's still some congressmen out there trying to find the truth on certain issues.
They also believe, you know, they also believe in chemtrails. That's the problem. It's one or the other.
Yeah, it's really not very good. And Chuck Schumer was the one during the Waco congressional hearings that was most against the branch to be
like, I love what they did, and I'm happy that they did it.
But you know what? You know what proves the fact that the ATF and the FBI and the federal government and Janet Reno and the Clinton administration acted improperly was the fact how differently they handled the Warren Jeff situation.
Yeah.
Yes.
Warren Jeff just went through a prosecution. It was a very similar.
And it was
very
similar. It was all paperwork.
So
it was
he had a town.
Yeah, Colorado
he was
City.
He was a rapist.
I lived there when I was a kid.
And he was a rapist and a monster and the whole thing. I mean, you know, I still think David Koresh is wrong just because I think
how do you handle it? That's the question.
Yes.
At some point,
it was a dry raid.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way to do it. But it's never really happened. I mean, again, and Clive Bundy as well, the ATF stood down. They're like, mm-hmm. we can't have another Waco. Everyone knows how bad Waco was, which is so ironic, of course. Every time you're trying to make a woman love you, you just do something stupid.
Whoa.
And the FBI and the ATF was like, America's going to love us. We're going to do something great for them. And they just came across looking like idiots.
Wow. That is a great analogy, Ben.
Yeah. You got to let America come to you.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
Play hard to get, ATF.
Hey, nice. Yeah. Put nice cologne on.
Right.
Yep. And you're talking about destroying evidence. As the building is burning, there are tanks pushing the debris into the fire, actively destroying what is a crime scene.
Right.
What is absolutely a crime scene. Even if it is suicide, it's still a crime scene. And they're just actively destroying everything. And after that, God, this is the worst part. There's a flagpole. Had the Star of David on it for the Branch Davidians.
Sure.
It burns off, flies off. And as soon as it flies off, the ATF runs their fucking flag up the
flagpole. And that is a Hollywood producer's idea.
Right.
That is a wag the tail. Like, they were doing it. Oh, they were showing it.
Well, it's
that
like was Hiroshima.
Look at this shot we got here. But, bam, bam.
That is so fucking disgusting.
But well,
that more, I don't know. That's like they're conquerors. No, they've conquered people. Like,
I got to say, though,
it's mind boggling.
This is what happens when you don't have a unilateral international enemy. When the Russians went down, when we no longer had the Ruskies and the Soviet Union to fight, we chose to fight ourselves.
I also will like to say a prayer for all the bad macaroni art that died.
Oh my God! You know? The kids. I'm telling you, I don't even know.
It's so horrible. It's horrible.
Yeah. And all of the shell casings, all of the bullets, all of the grenade fragments, all of the so-called illegal weapons, because the ATF or the FBI said that they found 58 illegally modified AK-47s in the wreckage. But on the other hand, they confiscated all of that, and it has never been allowed to be inspected by anybody besides the FBI since.
It's like JFK's brain, to go back to JFK. And it's like Whitney Houston's hotel room. We're going to whitewash that so I can't go play with the sink.
Yeah. And Janet Reno said there was absolutely no doubt at all that the cult member set the fire, and the only action taken against any of the ATF agents, a few of them were forced to resign with full pensions,
right?
Not because 70 people burned to death, but because it was said they lost the element of surprise.
Yep. Right. And then she invited all her girlfriends over for a nice night where they were going to try on makeup together and talk about how much they love their husbands.
Right. That's the whole thing. That's why you can't trust Janet Reno, because by definition, you can't trust a closeted homosexual. They're always lying. Everything they've ever done is a lie.
Yeah.
And it is great to see a couple of gallon, you know, 3 gallon sized pencil skirts. You don't see much of that anymore.
Oh my goodness.
And the worst consequence of all, I believe that the worst consequence of Waco came 2 years later with the bombing of the Murrah building in Oklahoma City by Timothy McVeigh. And Timothy McVeigh specifically cited Waco as the reason behind the Oklahoma City bombing, which the Oklahoma City bombing, by the way, the largest case of domestic terrorism in American history, killed over 300 people. And he cited Waco as his inspiration.
Well, you know, it's just one of the, it's an old adage, but they always say, you know, violence, you know, begets violence. And that's the same thing with the, you know, the Boston Marathon bombers. They were complaining about the drone attacks over in Yemen and Pakistan.
Teaching Osama bin Laden how to fight guerrilla warfare. Like,
not a brilliant idea to kill, to beat the Russians. You know, I mean, we
have a history of that. Mm-hmm. We're really good teachers.
Yeah.
But it's actually,
I also have a real problem with the 11th season of that singing, The Voice.
The Voice.
That show's really gone down.
But 11 seasons. Just give up.
McVeigh was a terrible terrorist.
Yeah.
That's the guy to arrest.
Oh, we got him.
Yeah, we got him less than a day later. Just took us a couple more days to get
Terry
Nichols.
You know when you should get Timothy McVeigh? The day before. That's when you nab him. Grab him good there.
Yeah. But Waco is a fucking deep, deep scar on the soul of America.
It's a turning point.
It really is.
Well, you know, buy Japanese. That's my new calling card.
Never done nothing wrong. Yeah. The Japanese have never done anything wrong to America.
You know, they've done some stuff. They got great cartoons. Love the cartoons.
Yeah.
Well, so that was great. We all learned a lot today.
Yeah. I hope that was educational for
Have
everyone.
Fun with your jobs.
Yeah.
Have fun now.
Yeah.
Going to jobs and watching baseball and enjoying yourself.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Waco, Texas. Well, hopefully it doesn't happen again. It's just tough to find a good charismatic leader these days.
It's hard to.
But I mean, again, that was the weird thing about Koresh. Not that charismatic, and that's kind of why people liked him.
He kind of looked like Jeffrey Dahmer.
Kind of did.
Yeah,
same glasses.
But people in our fans seem to think Jeffrey Dahmer is handsome. So
yeah.
Well, it's good to be back. We'll be doing more episodes. I'm going to be bouncing around the country.
You have you're going to be going into Atlanta tomorrow to start shooting the third season.
No, more second season.
Oh, more second season for Pretty Face, and then you'll be going down to shoot your ABC sitcom
in Los Angeles.
Very
so. Please come by and see me. Bring me weed.
That sounds great. That's Henry Loves You on Twitter, Marcus Parks on Twitter, and Ben Kissel, of course. And I guess we got the shirts coming out soon.
Yeah.
We can start talking about that now.
Yeah,
right?
We've got the t-shirts that are coming very soon, either this week or next. We're going to be opening up donations to Last Podcast on the Left.
Yeah.
And we're going to be doing pre-orders for shirts with every $25 donation or more. You will receive a t-shirt.
And if you're lucky, it'll smell like one of us.
Yeah, we're going to rub all the shirts on one of our butts. So that'll be exciting. And I want to thank everybody from the bottom of my heart for the happy birthday wishes.
Very sweet.
I don't celebrate my birthday, but I do on Facebook.
Yeah.
So that's kind of nice.
Very sweet.
Thank you.
Hey, Satan. Please hear him.
Hair again.
Hair again.
Magustalations, everybody.
Magustalations. Oh, so sweet. Say a prayer for my distributions.
Yeah.
And hail me as well.
And hail yourselves as well. All right, everyone. We'll talk to you soon.